from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I heard the story late last week, and by now y'all know the drill. I'm always sort of fantasizing about potential recruiting scenarios that could benefit Georgia. For me, I assume that this was probably just sort of pie in the sky thinking. Josh Belk, the former elite recruit to Alabama, or I should say Clemson, who granted his unconditional release from that program after just enrolling back in January because of, you know, what is sort of thought of as a family issue here. It looked like, you know, very quickly that it might be South Carolina who was the likely destination for Belk. But I will admit, I did wonder out loud, hey, is there a chance that Georgia could get involved here? Not to make light of whatever family situation that Belk has going on that makes him feel like he needs to leave Clemson, look for a new college home here. But I did sort of wonder out loud, but I will also admit that I guess I sort of thought, oh, that's pie in the sky thinking. That's too good to be true. Georgia, which desperately needs defensive tackles, could get involved here with a transfer defensive tackle who's of the caliber that Josh Belk is, the recent Clemson signee. I did ask Jeff Sintel about it on Friday when he joined us here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, and here's part of what Jeff had to say about the relationship with Belk and his former school Clemson and potential new suitors. Here's a little bit from Jeff Sintel.
If it's really about distance, then, you know, Athens is 3 hours away. I think Clemson is 2.5 hours away. The closest school there might be Will Muschamp and those Carolina Gamecocks, because that's only about an hour away from home. I think that's a situation where there's an issue with a member of his family and declining health, and he needs to be closer to home to kind of support that family member.
I feel the need to say once again here that I am so sorry to Belk and his family for whatever very serious issue that's going on there. I won't pretend to be an expert on that. I'm sure you can find all kinds of rumor and innuendo about that on the internet, but I'll sort of stick to the facts as we know them. All we know for the moment is Belk is looking for a new college home, and while I certainly have empathy for him and whatever he's dealing with, this is obviously a football show when we look at the football ramifications of things, and a free agent of this caliber is a pretty big deal. But the information, as we understood it at the end of last week, is that he was leaving Clemson. South Carolina was the program closest to his home. You heard Jeff Sintel said that this might be a big win for Will Muschamp and the South Carolina Gamecocks. But then, at the very end of our conversation, Jeff Sintel did drop in another nugget of information that had the potential to change this conversation completely. And as it turns out, maybe that's what's going on here. Here's a little more from Jeff, adding another wrinkle into the Josh Belk story.
Interesting wrinkle there. I don't know if whether the family might be moving, which would throw all that geography out of whack a little bit. That's something where I know Georgia would love to keep adding in the defensive tackle spot. You know, Belk is a guy that held himself up very well, was a kind of a big-time early enrollee at Clemson in their class, and that's one last player they have for their class of 2018.
So he wants to be closer to home, but maybe he's moving. Jeff Sintel dropping that pretty interesting nugget in there that maybe he's not going to be quite as close to Columbia anymore. Maybe the family's moving for whatever reason they might be moving, and all of a sudden South Carolina's not the closest school for Josh Belk. And then we find out this, that the next domino to fall here, a report that Josh Belk indeed plans on visiting UGA on Thursday. Do we have the, we have from the News and Reporter here, that's a local paper that covers where Josh Belk is from. They say breaking news, Louisville grad Josh Belk, received an unconditional release from his Clemson football scholarship last week, will visit the University of Georgia on Thursday per his attorney, Everett Stubbs. So all of a sudden, Georgia has gotten involved here and going to get the visit on Thursday from Belk. Now, my understanding is here on this Wednesday, as we're doing this show live right now, I guess Belk is expected to go to South Carolina today, and then Georgia gets a chance to bat next on Thursday. And I don't have to tell you what a potential huge deal this would be for the Georgia Bulldogs because of the needs along the defensive line, which we will get to. But even before that, it's just another example of Kirby Smart doing the kind of stuff that has endeared him to Georgia fans so much in his first, you know, couple years here as the leader of the Georgia program. Really, for the people who listen to Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza every day, the stuff they like best about Kirby Smart is not necessarily the SEC championship game, as strange as that might be to us, or, you know, winning the Rose Bowl against Oklahoma. Those are great memories. But the sort of day-to-day stuff that makes Kirby so popular with the Georgia fans is the fact that he is always swinging for the fences every dadgum day when it comes to big guys like this. A tiny sliver of an opportunity, and Kirby Smart seems to work his way in there and at least gets a chance to visit. Now, I won't pretend to know where Belk ends up going here, but the fact that Georgia even gets a chance to entertain on this visit here, at least according to the report, gets a chance to do that. I got to tell you, I think that's a pretty big deal, and it's once again Kirby Smart sort of living up to his billing as, you know, frankly, maybe the most energetic recruiting head coach in the South right now. And of course, the other reason why all of this is such a big deal is because of how much Georgia needs these guys. Kirby Smart talked about it during the spring. Georgia already thin along the defensive line, dealt with some injuries, having to go up and practice every day against what is likely an elite offensive line. Kirby Smart, the defensive-minded coach, does not like seeing his defensive line getting pushed around, and he said so and talked about that earlier in the spring.
We're struggling a little bit defensively on the defensive line. We just don't have as much depth, and we're not as physical as we need to be. And I don't know if that's a credit to them or a problem for our defense, but something we got to rectify, and we definitely need some help on the depth of the defensive line.
Yeah, need some help on the depth of that defensive line there. Where you think about, you know, 2019, 2020, that's still going to be the case here as well. That's one of the reasons why 2019 defensive tackles are such a big priority for this program. It's when we talked yesterday about Jalen Humphries. It's why we talked so much about Trayvon Walker. It's when we talk about C.J. Clark, who seems to be a recruit that's sort of growing in stature here, that in the 2019, 2020 classes, for those seasons on the field as well, Georgia just needs a lot more talent and depth there at those positions. And frankly, one of the reasons why that's true is because of the small number of true defensive tackles coming in for the class of 2018. And Kirby Smart admitted that as well, that when you think about help for the defensive line, you're really not getting that much of that for the incoming freshmen who arrive later on in the summer.
Not many in that position. So, we're excited about the guys we got coming in. I think it's tough to play as a true freshman. You know, we had that crowd of Tyler and Julian and Mikhail and David, all that really helped us that one year. We're certainly going to need some help in depth-wise. I think the key is going to be staying healthy, because losing two guys like John and Trenton, I don't think you'd think it would have as much of an effect, but we really only gained one in Devontae Wyatt. So the sum effect of that with Michael Barnett being a little out has put us short. So
that's the story in 2018. But as far as like 2019, 2020 goes, you know, this is one of the reasons why a guy like Belk's even being entertained here. And I won't pretend to know where this is going. A lot of times my predictions have a way of going the opposite of what I think they're going to be here. But I'll state again, I think it's a big deal that Georgia's in on this conversation. It's Kirby Smart doing everything he can. You know, I like to think of it as sort of working the waiver wire. You know, their signing day where most teams add to their roster. But Kirby Smart keeps himself busy here in the spring and summer months, looking to get better with transfer options. Graduate transfer guys who can play right away, and more traditional transfers as well. Kirby Smart's just been really good at that. I think this is another example of this too. As I said, I'm not sure what the end result of all this is going to be, but for now, it's pretty fun to watch it play out. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented by Marco's Pizza. We're glad you're with us. No matter how you get to us, and I say it all the time, but there are a lot of different venues for you to check out our program here on video, Dog Nation Facebook page, Twitter page, YouTube page. We're live at 10 a.m., and today I guess we're going head-to-head a bit with Georgia baseball, which is going to start here in about 15 minutes or so. Those of you that are doing double duty here with your screens, let us know how the Georgia baseball game is going. It's sort of hard for me to watch the game and talk to y'all at the same time, but y'all can give us some updates. I know y'all do that with Jeff sometime on his video shows with the Braves games at night, so y'all can do that with the Georgia baseball game here in the morning. Some of you may say, I also have to squeeze in a little work here and there as well, which I guess I probably understand a bit too. On the radio in Newnan, we're actually not on the radio today. We are not on the radio in Athens today, but we will be back there again when the SEC tournament is done. Our friends on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref are the home for Georgia baseball, and so they're broadcasting from the SEC tournament here today. Well, we look forward to being back on 960 The Ref again very soon. We are available podcast form, wherever podcasts are found, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, the world famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud. Thanks so much for checking out Dog Nation Daily. And by now you know that all of this is made possible by our friends at Marco's Pizza, who invites you to say hello to authentic Italian quality pizza from Marco's. Every pizza is topped with three signature cheeses that make for the perfect melt every time. Order today from Marco's.com. We're certainly glad to have them with us and hope you'll take advantage of that. I say it and I mean it. My family loves Marco's Pizza. It is the primo choice for us in our household. There is no doubt about that. All right. In a couple of minutes, Mike Johnson, my buddy, my partner from SEC Country Live, going to be here for his regular Wednesday conversation with us. And one of the things we're going to talk about with him is something that happened on his brand new show, Roll Tide Daily, yesterday. The same way that we kind of occasionally make some news and start a conversation right here on Dog Nation Daily, Mike sort of did some of this yesterday on Roll Tide Daily as well. You may remember Mike's good friend, the former Alabama quarterback, John Parker Wilson, recently went on sports radio station in Birmingham, WJOX, and talked about how over the long haul, he thinks that Jeremy Pruitt is scarier at Tennessee than Kirby Smart is at Georgia. We obviously did a little more than just raise an eyebrow at this. We frankly thought it was pretty ridiculous. Now, I don't dislike John Parker Wilson. Seems like a pretty good guy, and I don't fault him for sharing an opinion. That's fine. It's okay to think Pruitt's going to be good, especially when you and Pruitt were together at Hoover High School. Parker Wilson as a player and Pruitt as a coach. It's okay to think he's going to be good. But in comparison to Kirby Smart, it seems like there's just probably not a ton of evidence to necessarily support that opinion necessarily. But, you know, some Georgia fans had some problems with John Parker Wilson over that comparison of Kirby Smart and Jeremy Pruitt. And yesterday on Mike's show, JPW did his best to try to explain where his remarks were coming from. Here is a little bit from the former Alabama QB.
You are missing one of the key parts of the statement was long term. I'm not talking about this year. I'm talking about long term. I think Jeremy Pruitt is going to be a great college football coach. I was with him at Hoover High School. I was with him at Alabama when he was a recruiting guy. Saw him coach. Knows how he works with people. And I just think he is going to be a fantastic head coach. And I wasn't throwing shots at Kirby by any stretch of the imagination. I was just saying where he's at, he really scares me being in Tennessee. We do play them every year.
So, look. I think from a Georgia fan's perspective here, and that's obviously where I come from on this show every day, what John Parker Wilson even says right there in his attempt to clarify, with all due respect, is just asinine. And this is not me trying to pick a fight with him, and it's not me trying to pick a fight with my buddy Mike Johnson, whose show in which John Parker Wilson said that on. It's just it's asinine because I believe that there's plenty of evidence to suggest that, you know, when John Parker Wilson says, hey, in the future, Alabama's going to be scared of Tennessee, I believe there's evidence to suggest that Alabama's scared of Georgia right now. You know, Alabama beat Georgia in the field. Give them credit for that, for the national championship game. But have you seen all the changes that have been made to Alabama since January, all the coaching changes, all the recruiting process changes, all the young, new energy that's being instilled into that program? I mean, what is all of that about? I think it's fairly obvious what that's about. It's about Alabama trying to keep pace with the energy that Kirby Smart brings to the table. After all, I mean, Kirby Smart, as we talked about before, reportedly has the visit coming from Josh Belk, the four-star defensive tackle here, position of need, elite recruit becomes available, former recruit anyway, and Kirby Smart gets in there. That's the stuff that Alabama's truly afraid of. I mean, afraid of Tennessee, maybe one day, But ask yourself this question. I mean this, and I know I'm preaching the choir, and there's almost a point of what's it even worth saying if everybody that's listening agrees, but nonetheless, I'm going to say it anyway. What is Jeremy Pruitt selling that Kirby Smart is not also selling and has been selling for a little bit longer, maybe a little bit better? He's a youthful former defensive coordinator. Well, so is Kirby Smart, but he's now been a head coach now for 2 years. You know, he's a tireless recruiter. Well, you know, so is Kirby Smart, and he's got the recruiting wins to prove that. Jeremy Pruitt's got a couple commitments and maybe one decent pull from the 2018 class, but a lot of near misses, a lot of silver medals there. Not to say that Pruitt can't be successful, but he's essentially trying to do sort of a low-calorie, zero-sugar version of what Kirby Smart's already been doing for 2 years. I mean, when you face competition, you're either better, worse, or different. In the case of Jeremy Pruitt, it's not obvious that he's better. He's not really different. That only leads you, kind of one alternative in this comparison with Kirby Smart right now. But nonetheless, John Parker Wilson went on in his comparison here, trying to explain that for him, it's more about a long-term play with Pruitt in comparison to Kirby Smart. Here's JPW again.
Now, Kirby's in a different stratosphere right now and where he's at and where the Georgia program is. So the key term right there was long-term, because I don't know if Jeremy's going to be at Tennessee for 5 years or 15 years, but I just know his makeup and what kind of coach he's going to be. Maybe not this year, but he's going to get that Tennessee program in a direction they haven't been in such a long time. And from an Alabama fan, it scares me, because at some point you got to revert to the mean, and we beat them now 11 years in a row. A guy like him can rally the troops and circle the wagons and get their program in the right direction, because I think if you look at the old Tennessees back in the day when they were successful with Phil Fulmer, they're recruiting nationally. They're getting quarterbacks from California. They're getting receivers from Alabama. They're getting running backs from Georgia. I think Pruitt and his ability to recruit is bringing that national recruiting in to a place like Knoxville that's been starving for that for so long.
Couple quick comments here. Our buddy Junior Baker, who knows his stuff, says, B.A., you're just a homer. Leave Pruitt alone. Only time will tell. that's fine. But I would say even of the more objective potential analysts with conversation like this, is anybody taking Pruitt over Kirby Smart, given the fact that Kirby's got a track record, Jeremy Pruitt as of yet does not? Also in the comment section, I believe it was James Crump who said this, that, you know, when you compare personalities, James says that Smart's charismatic, Pruitt's more of a bully. I don't know that Pruitt's truly a bully as the head coach of Tennessee, but I do think, to use Junior's phrase about time telling, I think time's going to tell if Jeremy Pruitt has the demeanor to transition from defensive coordinator to head coach, whereas Kirby Smart's already proven that. Fascinating conversation. Our buddy Mike Johnson did a great job of starting it, and here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, let's continue it as we bring on Mike Johnson right now. 3 p.m. This afternoon Eastern Time on the SEC Country video channels. You can check out SEC Country Live, and when you check that out, you'll check out the former Alabama All-American Mike Johnson, who's good enough to join us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza today, and has had a great week, debut week for a Roll Tide Daily there on the Alabama video channels. And, you know, Mike, John Parker Wilson made some news the other day when he went on WJOX and sort of made the Jeremy Pruitt, Kirby Smart comparison. You made some news again yesterday, bringing on JPW to try to clarify those remarks. And I'm sure you're probably not surprised to find out that the clarification doesn't work for everyone in this audience, as you might imagine.
Yeah, I'm not shocked to hear that at all. I think that when you talk about John Parker Wilson, he didn't so much back off his thoughts on that and just tried to clarify his thought process on it. So, you know, it was interesting to hear him come on and kind of talk about it. He doubled down on that, kind of his thoughts about his relationship with Jeremy Pruitt and how far they go back, how he interacts with people. And, you know, I think he did a good job of trying to clarify that. I still told him, and I told him on air, you know, I still tend to disagree with him. I think that, you know, his assessment's a little bit off base. You know, what are you scared of Jeremy Pruitt doing? Are you scared of Jeremy Pruitt going to the SEC title game? Are you scared of him going to the national title game? Are you scared of him getting the number one recruiting class? Those are things that Kirby Smart's already checked off. And so, obviously, for those reasons, scary doesn't seem to be a term that comes to mind when you talk about Jeremy Pruitt over Kirby Smart yet. But he brought up the same points I kind of did the first time I came on your show, and brought up the point that Alabama plays Tennessee yearly. I mean, it's the team they have to see year in and year out as a cross-division opponent. And for that reason, that he thinks that it's likely that Jeremy Pruitt kind of comes back to the pack a little bit and is able to knock off Alabama in the coming years. So, I thought he did a good job of explaining himself. I knew that it wouldn't go over well with just everybody, but, you know, at least he got on the show and had a chance to kind of let his words breathe a little bit.
No, it's great fodder for conversation. There's no doubt about that. And I guess I better say to your face, or at least face-to-face, and, you know, person-to-person here, what I said before you came on, that for me, what's ludicrous about the thought of, oh, Jeremy Pruitt and Tennessee are sort of scary in the future is I believe that Alabama's scared of Georgia right now. I believe that there is, and it doesn't mean that Alabama won't still win the 2018 national championship. It doesn't mean that Alabama is not still a force to be reckoned with. But I think that Alabama has seen, Nick Saban in particular maybe here, an energy coming from Kirby Smart in Georgia that the Crimson Tide knows it has to match. Alabama's been on top of the league for a long time. I don't think that Les Miles at LSU ever, you know, threatened Alabama the way that Georgia is. I don't think that, you know, but by the time that Saban got going in Alabama, essentially Urban Meyer had already been vanquished at Florida. You know, Alabama hasn't seen a real formidable challenger. Auburn, as you know, is sort of up and down. They're an EKG machine on a consistent basis. Even they haven't, you know, threatened Alabama, although they have beaten them a couple times here head-to-head. This is the most formidable challenge that Alabama has faced, and Saban's been on top here in the SEC with the Crimson Tide. So to say that you're going to be scared of Alabama, Tennessee in the future, I mean, I think there's some evidence to suggest Alabama's scared of Georgia right now.
Yeah, you know what? I might have to pull a page out of the Brandon Adams playbook and flip that back and play that later on Roll Tide Daily today. You know, talking about Alabama being scared of Georgia. I think, you know, and that's good stuff. And listen, I tend to agree with you. I don't know that scared, perhaps, is, you know, the word I would use. I think that Nick Saban's very cognizant of what Kirby Smart's doing. He understands the tireless worker that Kirby Smart is. He understands what a good recruiter and good football coach Kirby is. Listen, there's a reason that Nick Saban drug Kirby Smart from location to location as an assistant coach and had him do the things that he had him do under Nick Saban's watch. I think he definitely notices what's going on over in Athens. I think he understands the challenges that lie ahead in terms of when they do face Georgia. I think that he understands what Kirby's building over there. I think there's a renewed sense of energy for Nick Saban when it comes to games like that and series like that and facing assistant coaches. And listen, if I'm being honest, just from a fan perspective, not so much as a former Alabama player, I think a lot of Alabama fans have kind of wanted something like this. Scared, I guess, is a little bit of the word, but Alabama fans have kind of yearned for this. When you look at the East, when you look at the SEC championship games that Alabama played against Florida in back-to-back years, they just didn't have the luster. You know, they also played, I think, Missouri maybe one time back in there. It didn't have the luster. It didn't have the pageantry that it did back in 08 and 09 when my teams faced off against Urban Meyer's Florida Gator team. So it's a little bit of a breath of fresh air. I think it's something the SEC needed. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways it's kind of revitalized a lot of things going on in the SEC right now.
Well, in a roundabout way, I agree with you, and I think you're going to agree with me on this, that, you know, if Alabama had no legitimate competition, if Auburn was just a 7-5 team, if LSU, you know, struggled, if there was no, like, real threat from the East, eventually Alabama would also suffer there as well. Competition just makes college football teams better. I mean, you look at the Iron Bowl rivalry here as an example of this. Nick Saban sort of plants his flag at Alabama. What do you know? 2010, now Auburn's got Cam Newton. They sort of respond to that challenge. Well, Auburn's good. Now Alabama comes back bigger and better in 2011 and 2012. Which sort of, you know, creates a scenario for Gus Malzahn to get that job for 2013, and both sides over time make the other better. And part of the reason why Alabama is as good as it is because it's been pushed by Auburn as hard as it has. It's one of the reasons why I've always encouraged Georgia fans, look to Florida as your rival more so than Georgia Tech, because over the long haul, Florida's just going to push you more than Georgia Tech is. Aspire to be better than Florida, you accomplish something. Aspire to being better than Georgia Tech, you're going to Shreveport, or at least, you know, there's no guarantee you're going to anything better than that. So, I mean, even though, you know, what you're saying, you know, maybe you're just saying it to be nice, but there is an element of really, if this is some big rivalry about to emerge between Alabama and Georgia, it's the kind of thing that potentially makes both sides better, because when you feel a legitimate threat from a powerhouse 3 hours down the road, all of a sudden you don't take days off anymore and you don't sleep late anymore. All of a sudden you're doing everything you can to get a transfer defensive tackle like Josh Belk to come take a visit at your school or something along those lines, because, you know, you got to do that just to keep up with what Alabama's doing, and maybe one day Georgia will be good enough that it's conversely true for the Crimson Tide as well.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with what you're saying. I think that, you know, I don't know that Nick Saban would ever admit that it was directly a reactionary move, but listen, Alabama had to clean house on their staff. They had to change the way they go about recruiting this past offseason. Now, so far, it's been working out for them. So far, you know, they do have you know, a pretty good class coming in for next year. But they had to change the way they did things. I think it's a direct correlation between what they were doing in Alabama and the changes they've made and what they're doing at Georgia. I think that you can draw that direct line in the sand. And Nick Saban was very cognizant of what Kirby Smart was able to do on the recruiting trail, able to get some of the wins that Nick Saban had gotten in the past last year. And I think that Nick Saban understands that things needed to change. So it has a lot of different ways of kind of poking its head out. I think, you know, recruiting, on-the-field tactics, the way you're building football teams, Nick Saban has had to roll with the punches. I mean, you're right. Whenever you have another team in your own division or, you know, in your own conference that's doing some of those things, I mean, you roll with the punches of Les Miles in 2011. You know, you faced a couple of different Heisman Trophy winners, 2010, 2012, Johnny Manziel, Cam Newton. So they've had to roll with the punches in a lot of different ways. And I think that I'm sure you've covered Athlon Sports. They did an article called The 5-Year War about Georgia and Alabama for the upcoming 5 years. I think that a lot of Alabama fans, and I know Georgia fans, feel the same way. If this is not a game we see at least a few times in the coming 5 years, then it'll be a disappointment.
And Georgia's certainly got to do a lot to live up to its end of the bargain on that, because Alabama's obviously been there for a while, and Georgia's clawing to try to get to that status. And along those lines, let me change the subject here, because ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh was, you know, a part of, you know, some off-season content the other day where the subject comes up of the next coach to win his first national championship, and he thinks it's going to be Kirby Smart. Now, Mike, where I come from on this is, at one point in time, it would have been very exciting to hear an ESPN writer say, the next coach to win his first national championship will be, you know, the Georgia coach, whether it's Smart now or Mark Richt before that. That would have been sort of a headline-grabbing deal here. I think we're to the point now where that's what Kirby Smart's supposed to do. You know, he's making $7 million a year as the Georgia coach. He was in the playoff last year. He's had consecutive seasons, the two best recruiting classes in Georgia history here. You've never had individual classes as good as these two, and you certainly have never had back-to-back classes the way the 2017, the 2018 classes have worked out for Georgia here. anything less than a national championship is now not just a disappointment. I would go so far as to say it's sort of an unmitigated disaster if somehow, you know, 5 years into the future, you want to exhaust the eligibility of these two quarterbacks who are here right now. If Georgia hasn't won a national championship, then something's gone horribly wrong, hasn't it?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. You know, I hate to back anybody into that corner. I think that Kirby Smart's done an incredible job. I know how hungry Georgia fans are for a national title. I know how hard it is to get there. I've seen it, you know, first and foremost, I've seen the work that you need to put in. So it stinks a little bit to put that label on it. But I think it's a credit to Kirby Smart. It's a credit to the resources at Georgia. It's a credit to that program. It's a credit to the fan base for the hunger and kind of the expectation they're putting on the program right now. I think when you look at it, and look at the upward trajectory that Kirby Smart really is on, that you're right, it would be a little bit of you know, not only a disappointment, but a lot of other things if Kirby Smart's not able to get there in the coming years. I think he still has to have the right blend of players. I think he has to still have the right blend of leadership and, you know, the kind of, you know, society he's building there in Georgia has to be the right direction. But I'm with you. I think that you ought to expect those things in the coming years for Georgia, and I think that Kirby Smart is the right man to get you there.
And let me be very clear about this. Just because it's supposed to happen doesn't mean it's easy to happen. This is not some birthright you inherit it. This is, you know, some task that you go out and work feverishly towards. I'm not saying that it's going to be this kind of thing where Georgia just, you know, marches into some sort of coronation here, but that's what Kirby Smart is doing. The big talk, the big money, you know, the sort of macro level in which Georgia's trying to compete now, it's all about winning a national championship. You know, consecutive trips to the college football playoff, you know, multiple appearances, you know, winning the East. All that stuff is sort of secondary now to really the only goal for this Georgia program, I believe.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And honestly, it is tough over at Alabama at times. And you do talk to fans, and there is an expectation level that Nick Saban has built to where if you don't get to the national title, the season really actually is a failure. And that's just been the nature of the beast. And that's why I kind of look at what Kirby Smart's doing, and I try to say, boy, you know, it stinks that you can't just sit back and enjoy the season, that you can't, you know, sit back and enjoy the victories that are coming in. But that's the credit to him, and that's the credit to the program he's built. That's a credit to the things he's done off the field in terms of recruiting, and that's a credit to the talent level he has in the organization now. So you're right, it's not a birthright, and it's never going to be easy. But I think that when you talk about projections, when you talk about mid-May off-season chatter, I think it's a fair point to say that it would be a huge disappointment if he doesn't get back there and win that championship in the next 2 years.
You're on the phone right now. You can't see what I'm about to show, but for the people on video, let me show you a screen grab from I think this is Nick Chubb's account here. It's he and, yeah, it's Chubb's Instagram account. It's he and Baker Mayfield standing side by side here, both wearing the Cleveland Browns jerseys. Now, I'm a big, big fan of Chubb in Cleveland. I hope he has a great career there. And you know, Mike, because you and I have talked personally about this, how I feel about Baker Mayfield. I am not a fan of his whatsoever. I got to tell you, it sort of hurts my heart here a bit to see these two guys palling around and standing side by side. As you know, they roomed together during the first Browns rookie minicamp here. Did you have this experience at any point in time in your NFL career where you had to sort of share a locker room, share the same uniform with a former college rival, be it a Tennessee or an Auburn guy, or, you know, maybe even a Florida player that you played in the SEC championship here? Because it is, even though you knew it was coming at some point, it is, for me, a fan, somewhat jarring to see Mayfield and Chubb standing side by side like that.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of instances like that, and I think that once you get to that level, you try to approach it as professionally as you can, but that definitely doesn't make it easier for a lot of other people to swallow. And I don't know that I ever had a direct teammate or somebody that I had to coexist with in terms of people that I played against or that I blogged against. I guess Tyson Jackson from LSU, I was teammates with him in Atlanta for a year, and we definitely butted heads a couple of times. Trey Jerry was another player from Ole Miss that we went up against a couple of times. But, you know, it was one of those things where at the time, you know, I had all the bragging rights getting into the NFL after winning the national title, so it wasn't a big deal. Now, I will tell you this, when I did play in the Senior Bowl, I was blocking for, you know, guys like Ben Tate from Auburn and going up against Antonio Coleman from Auburn, and that was definitely an adjustment. You know, if you spent your whole life, like, wishing the worst for these guys on the football field, and then all of a sudden you're trying to lay a block out for the guy that's going to score a touchdown a couple of weeks later. That was definitely a little bit of a transition, but I think as far as the NFL goes, you try to treat it as professionally as you can.
Now, let me try to squeeze in a couple quick issues before we get ready to let you go here. First of all, on D'Angelo Gibbs, and you were very honest when you came on the show last week that, you know, much like Arden Key a year ago, that when a guy is away from the team during the spring, coming back and quickly getting reacclimated, in Gibbs' case, it's more about gaining weight and getting back up to that SEC level as a defensive back, and, you know, a case like an Arden Key or maybe something different, but for Gibbs, it's about needing to gain a little weight here. You said that's not an easy transition to necessarily make, and it sounds like Kirby Smart agrees with you. As you know, on Monday, Kirby told some reporters in Columbus that just because Gibbs is going back to school again doesn't mean he's necessarily back on the team again, and this is a bit of an extension from what you talked about last week, that the road back when you've been away from football, it's just not easy, right?
No, it's incredibly tough. And I've said this a few different times. When people point to, well, you know, he's just taking a couple of months away. Well, you know, he's got to work through some issues. There is just nothing like being on campus, around your teammates, being pushed by your teammates, being pushed by the strength coach, having, you know, a guy like Kirby Smart looking over your shoulder, understanding that the upcoming prospects might be coming for your job. There's nothing that can replace that. There's nothing you can put in place in your personal life, working out with a private trainer, working out on your own. There's nothing you can put in place that really can get you back to that level. There's nothing like striving with your teammates. You had guys at Alabama, you know, video crews that would come out and kind of put the off-season workouts in slow motion. Boy, they're going through fourth quarter today. They're running 110s out in 110-degree heat. But that's things you look back on, and you just cannot replicate that if you're one of these guys that steps away from the program and is not working out with the team, not going through any kind of practices, not being a part of 7-on-7s. And I think that's the danger here for Georgia and D'Angelo Gibbs. I think that you really have to get plugged back into that as soon as you possibly can. I don't know that one fall camp is enough to get reacclimated in terms of what you need to do on the football field. So I think it's a big deal that Kirby comes out and says, listen, it doesn't necessarily mean he's a part of the team just yet. I think he needs to get back to that place where he can line up across from his teammates and stand next to them and run his conditioning drills and do those things all summer if he's going to get back to the player that he should be and get back to the player that Georgia needs him to be.
Smart words there from Mike Johnson, a guy who was a former player and certainly has the perspective that we need on that. Mike, we'll see you at 1 p.m. Eastern time for Roll Tide Daily. Not much of our audience probably, but if you've got friends who are Alabama fans, please let them know about the show. And then at 3 p.m. Eastern time, for SEC Country Live coming up later on this afternoon. Mike, thanks so much. We'll talk to you then.
All right, I'll see you this afternoon, buddy.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff from Mike Johnson. You know, by now everyone's sort of gotten used to Mike being on the show, but going back to the sort of genesis of why he's on Dog Nation Daily every week, it was always for me about two things. A, I really was proud of the work that we were doing on SEC Country Live, and I wanted people to know who Mike was. At the time, people remembered him as a player but didn't know him as a person, and I wanted Georgia fans to say, okay, even though this guy played somewhere else, he's kind of a good guy to talk some football with, and if you check out SEC Country Live, you're going to like what he brings to the table. There was certainly a big promotional, you know, aspect to this. I wanted to promote what we are doing on SEC Country Live. The other part of this always was, even if you didn't play at Georgia, if you were a good player, you have the perspective of a player that I cannot bring to this table. You know, I've followed college football very closely my entire life. When it comes to issues of fandom, I do think of myself as something of an expert because I have been such a diehard college football fan my entire life. But on issues of, hey, what's it like on those practice fields? What's it like inside that locker room? I'm at a loss. And so it's good to have guys like Mike that we can lean on that bring that to us. We'll do our SEC through here in just a moment. Before that, though, let me also remind you that when you're thinking about Memorial Day weekend coming up, a time to honor the fall and the people who have made America the bastion of freedom that it is, it's also a time to spend some time with family, and we do turn this into a bit of a celebration. And when you think about that, Kroger reminds you about Red, White, and Barbecue. For 4 days only, you can save on items for your Memorial Day parties, hot dogs, watermelons, ice cream, sandwiches, so much more. It starts today. You can download your coupons at Kroger.com or on the Kroger app. Now, you got to redeem. It's starting Friday, May 25th through Monday. It's that Memorial Day weekend, Friday through Monday, May 25th to 28th. Go to Kroger.com. You can get more information there. With that said, let's do our SEC through here. And Athlon Sports is out with its preseason All-SEC team. There'll be a million of these. We'll probably talk about them all. And there are six Georgia players who get first-team honors here. Our good friend Hannah has made us a nice little graphic for you on video. You can see all the folks that make the first team. DeAndre Swift goes as an all-purpose running back. He's not the only back that makes it. Benny Snell and Damian Harris also get those first-team honors. How about Andrew Thomas sliding over to left tackle? Athlon gives him the nod as a first-team All-SEC selection. DeAndre Baker, you're not surprised about. J.R. Reed, we talked about yesterday. Rodrigo Blankenship, kind of interesting to think about how far his career has come. Mecole Hardman, much the same way. Now, Kirby back in the spring says, hey, Hardman's got to win that punt returning job. We got to make sure he's actually that guy. But Athlon says if he is, he'll be first team All-SEC. And what's kind of fun and exciting about this is, given, you know, our conversations about this on Dog Nation Dailies of the past, when, you know, they're really, you know, the last year for Rick, the first year for Smart, even last year, you did not see a lot of first team All-SEC players from Georgia on these preseason SEC lists. Just gives you an indication of how the stature of the program has evolved over the course of the last few years. You cannot win the SEC without first-team All-SEC players. You just can't. And so I've always said that if you don't have any on the preseason team, that's fine, but you better find some by the time the postseason team gets handed out. Well, Georgia's in a lot better position to do that. As far as sort of the rest of this goes, Tua does get first-team quarterback from Athlon. A.J. Brown, maybe the best entire receiver in the entire league. He, along with Debo Samuel, that's two really good receivers. The tight end from Missouri, whose name I can't pronounce. Two Alabama offensive linemen make the first team. Trey Smith gets the nod here. That's obviously assuming he's healthy. First-team defense. Raekwon Davis is a load to deal with. Jeffrey Simmons is on there. Devin White, who Georgia will have to face. He's the big-time linebacker from LSU. Might remind you a little bit of Roquan Smith, although probably not quite that good. Also, Greedy Williams makes it there as well, so Georgia's got to kind of think about that. But that's sort of the status of that first-team All-SEC from Athlon. Pretty interesting stuff. I'm sure we'll talk more about that on SEC Country Live later on today. Something we talked about on SEC Country Live yesterday, speaking of receivers from Ole Miss, I mentioned A.J. Brown. He's the guy that's there and the guy that's going to be really good. Van Jefferson, though, left Ole Miss to go to Florida, stemming from, you know, all the issues in the postseason ban that Ole Miss has dealt with. Well, Florida has petitioned the SEC, along with Texas A&M, sort of co-sponsoring this legislation, for lack of a better word, to change the rule where if a player leaves a school that is under a postseason ban, you know, transfers to another SEC school, he would become immediately eligible. Now, obviously, this is a completely self-serving thing by Florida. It doesn't mean it's a bad rule. I'm sure, I guess it probably should be the case. I am for liberal, transfers. I'm for unrestricted transfer rules here. I don't have a problem with the rule so much, but it's obviously self-serving on the part of Florida. And ironically, when this gets voted on, the SEC media, I should say the SEC meetings in Destin next week, I think it's next week those meetings take place, this will be the second year in a row that Florida has petitioned for a rule change to get a player eligible for the school. Last year, it was Malik Zaire, the quarterback. This year, it'll be Van Jefferson. I'm guessing this probably goes through. I'm guessing Jefferson's eligible for Florida. He'll become pretty quickly one of their most dynamic playmakers. But for now, anyway, Florida's doing what it can to change the SEC rules here, and we'll make that your SEC through. I will also tell you that it's time for our Dog Day Q&A here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. A moment ago, I gave you the six names from Athlon who show up as first-team All-SEC selections. Kind of ironic that, you know, you didn't see Jonathan Ledbetter's name. That's a name I might would have thought would have gotten some consideration here. Mike Gilliard's name doesn't show up at the first team. He is on the second-team list. That's a guy that I thought might, you know, get some consideration there. No Terry Godwin, wide receiver, certainly a deep position. But I guess what I'm asking you is which Georgia player is the most likely to be an All-SEC guy this season? You can kind of weigh in on that. We'll take some comments here as a part of our Dog Day Q&A on both YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. You can get a weigh in on that. And if you want to weigh in on some other stuff, you can certainly get a chance to do that right here as well. Deion Ware says the Tua hype is crazy right now. You know, giving him a chance to be first-team All-SEC quarterback from Athlon after only having played a half of football. I mean, I'd be lying to you if I didn't think that Tua was a pretty good player, and I'd be lying to you if I didn't think that Tua was going to have a good season for Alabama. That's just the honest truth here. But I do find myself joining with other Georgia fans who say, how about we let him prove a little bit before we do this, especially at the expense of Jake Fromm, who did play more good football last year than Tua did, who is – you know, right there. I mean, obviously, you know, Jake Fromm lost the national championship game, But it's not like he was the reason that Georgia lost. He was just on the losing team. But you go look at Fromm; he equated himself pretty admirably, and in the Rose Bowl, he did more than that. So that's kind of where I'm going with that conversation. Troy Batten also brings up the name Tyler Clark, and for me, Tyler Clark, along with who Marshall Fleming mentions, DeAndre Baker. I mean, those have got to be up there near the top. Now, I mean, Raekwon Davis is a very good player. He's a very good player. But is Tyler Clark potentially better than Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State? I think he probably is. Also, Montez Sweat from Mississippi State's on this first team list. I think he probably is. I mean, I think that Tyler Clark's had a really good chance of being first team All-SEC defense. It's ironically, though, that he did not make the second team from Athlon either. That's Derek Brown, who's probably going to have a good year. Landis Durham from Texas A&M, who I admit I don't know a ton about, and CeCe Jefferson from Florida, who's probably going to have a pretty good year. But, I mean, y'all, I mean, if you're going to talk about, you know, sort of postseason, you know, considerations for all SEC teams, I mean, go back and look at the Rose Bowl. Tyler Clark was everywhere. And sometimes it's not always easy to live up to that, you know, for a full season, what you did in flashes in some of Georgia's biggest games, I'll grant you that. But I think the commenters who are mentioning Tyler Clark here as a likely name are sort of going down the right track, along with DeAndre Baker as well. Let me pop over to YouTube, get a couple comments on YouTube here also. Enrique Murillo says there are some bold and random predictions being made. Enrique, that's what I like about this time of year. I like bold and random predictions. I like, you know, starting a college football conversation and really enjoying every minute of it. It's one of the reasons why when we transition from just being an audio show to being both an audio and video show, things got really fun for me, because I love hearing what y'all have to say, and I love being challenged on my own viewpoints or hearing a viewpoint from you that maybe makes me alter a viewpoint that I have. I love that kind of stuff. It's fantastic. Some of y'all talking about, I guess, what the expectations for Florida here this upcoming season. That looks like what's kind of going on there in the YouTube comment section. Jacob Mahaffey says, I think that DeAndre Baker is probably the closest to a lock for all SEC. I almost completely agree with that phrasing, closest to a lock. I mean, you know, DeAndre Baker is universally praised coming off his 2017 season. Pro Football Focus had some really good numbers from Baker the other day about you know, just how good he was in sort of lockdown situations a year ago. And some of y'all have rightly criticized me for being very slow to notice. I was. I mean, a lot of times I do sort of get those 4- and 5-star blinders on that if you don't, you know, have, you know, if you're not 6'3" and if you, you know, didn't have, you know, 9, you know, million stars next to your name coming out of high school, I have a tendency to sort of disregard you. At times I'm guilty of that. And Baker is one of the, I would say, rare examples, but at least an example of how sometimes people just outperform their high school pedigree and their high school name. And DeAndre Baker is doing big things for UGA. All right, we will get ready to wrap up here on the program today. Good to have you with us, and good to have you thinking about 157 days from right now when Georgia goes back to Jacksonville as part of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party and beats the Florida Gators again. It's our Gator Hater Countdown, and we do it every day right here on Dawg Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. I'll also tell you that as I'm broadcasting this live, now when many of you listen to the show or rewatch the video later on, this won't be live anymore. I certainly grant you that. But as I speak to you live here, it looks like Georgia, if I've got the latest information, I don't have a video screen in front of me on this. I'm just sort of following this the old-fashioned way on the internet. But it looks like it's 0-0 top of the second between Georgia and Texas A&M here in the second round of the SEC tournament, Hoover, Alabama. Tough work last night for the broadcast team. I guess the last game didn't end until like 1:42 a.m. local time. Had some rain to deal with. Should be fun to watch this weekend and throughout the rest of the week. We'll talk to you about it and see you tomorrow right here on Dawg Nation Daily.